Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. How are you getting on? How is life? How's life for you? Out of 1 to 10, how was life? 10 being fantastic, 1 being an absolute pile of shite, a bag of shite, and you can't say 5. How is life for you? Ask yourself that question. From a helicopter view, how was life? Life is fantastic for me. It's probably an 8 at the moment, I'd say. All is going well. Now, don't get me wrong, that could all change tomorrow because my thoughts are only perceptions. You know, I could wake up tomorrow, could feel like a bag of shite, and it could be a 1. But I know that won't stay like that. The next day will be different. Just like today is an 8, tomorrow could be a 1. That's okay. That's just the way life is. And when you learn to understand that life is so changeable, it won't always be an 8 and it won't always be a 1. You don't have that fear then of eternity. It's going to be like this forever. Just like when you think the 8's going to last forever and it doesn't, and you start to get wobblers if you struggle with your mental health or trying to understand your own mind. And that's a great tip, that you know that will always change. The good will always move on to the bad, or, you know, it'll go up and down is what I'm trying to say to you. Right, so enough of that waffle. I'm back in the gaff. Dottie's over there in the chair. I'm using my phone as a camera. Save me doing the laptop and to send this off to Kev. So that's what we were doing, the intros from outside. I'll do the intro on the camera and the laptop when we record the sound, and Kev, the technical legend, throws it all together. But we decided we're going to do it using the phone. And then I'll have it on my phone. I'll send it off to Kev. He'll match it all up with the interview. I'll do the intros and then I'll send them off to Kev, and he does his magic. So I'm going to probably throw this on Facebook, let people know. So if you're looking at this on Facebook, the interview will be out on Monday. If you're listening to the podcast, it is a Monday. So this is a bit of a mind fuck. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do the intros, throw them up on Facebook, let people know what the shows are about. Because it's all about trying to promote the show. And I've been doing the videos on Facebook, doing my insights on the stuff that I have learned over the years in collaboration with the podcast stuff. You know, the podcast being a great servant to me in regards to my mental health, my own well-being, my own knowledge, my own education, my own connection with professionals and people that have the stories that have the power to inspire. It's been an amazing journey and I'm loving it. So the videos on Facebook is just a little byproduct, and the same as the Magic Minds meditation group, which has gone fantastic, by the way, on Facebook. People are really getting into it, getting some fantastic messages of people saying that they never meditated before, and the fact that I'm doing it for my gaff and they don't have to leave their house, it's brilliant, and they're really buying into it. They've never meditated, as I say, and they send me some powerful messages. Lads, girls, there's a great mix in the community and I love it. It's growing, it's lovely, and it's you know what, my intention was to set up a community in service of me, in service of my community. You know, so my meditation would be consistent, my spiritual journey would be consistent. That's why I set up, and I knew that then that people would get a huge benefit out of it, and which they are. So it's a win-win for everyone. So there you go. That's daily. Check out the Magic Minds meditation. We're on Facebook. We do live meditation, and I also do just record ones from my house and I throw them out. So it's well worth an investment of your time, methinks, if you've never meditated before. Even if you haven't, just come on over. It's a deadly little community. Some fantastic people. I think we've about 220 people now in the group, which is brilliant. And I love it. I love it. Right, last week's show, who did I have on? We had Chris Fallon from A Moment for Mindfulness Facebook page. Brilliant lad. Absolutely really enjoyed that interview with him. He's a good, good guy. He's a great Facebook page, full of positivity, full of inspiration. Check them out. They've nearly 60,000 followers and the brilliant posts. Really, really good. Very timely. I've opened them up someday and I'm like, wow, I really need to see that, hear that today. And it's all new kind of stuff. It's just brilliant. Even if it's old stuff, it's great to see again. It's deadly just to revisit it, you know. Even when if you have forgot something, you see it again. You're like, oh, I forgot about that. Deadly. That's a deadly little tool for me to keep me inspired and keep me motivated on my path, whether that be spirituality or just your daily life or your family struggles. Yeah, it's a deadly, deadly interview. What else is going on at the moment? Oh, here's one. I was at a seminar or a conference or a summit in Crow Park. It was the Workability 19, you know, about employability for people with disabilities and all, absolutely blew me away. Some fantastic speakers, Ram Boy, IWA, and I was invited along by Mark Barry from the IWA, friend and colleague of mine. He works at IWA, but we do a bit of work together with the transition year students that come to the hospital. He's a fantastic guy, fantastic coach, and if he recommends me to go anywhere, come along to anyone, I'd try me fucking damnedest to do that. Because he's such a good guy and he's such a genuine coach, leader, inclusive promoter of all things disability. I love him. He's a wheelchair user. He's a fantastic guy. So I went along to have some fantastic speakers at it. Really insightful, but really shine the light on the position that people with disabilities are when it comes back to returning to work. You know, there's a huge, huge, I think something like 65% of people with disabilities all over the world are unemployed. Only 20% of people with disabilities disclose to their employer. So that's 80% of people with disabilities don't disclose that they have a disability to their employer. There was a guy there in a wheelchair, seems going for an interview and the struggles of that and his fears and worries, it just blew me away. And then there was some speakers there, people in wheelchairs and people with disabilities, absolutely phenomenal at their roles that they do, and they've been a success, and it was really powerful, some of the stuff. The one thing that got me, you know, and I have to say, really stuck in the back of my throat was, now this is not a judgment or putting them down, I just think the summit and all that was fantastic, but this stuff, yeah, employers are rolling in and they're being more inclusive work, but I think that's a very symptomatic approach. I think they have to do it, and it comes to light in work, and it there's a light shining on it, so they have to do stuff. But I think, as Rosemary from IWA was talking about, and she mentioned, which I was delighted, that it's a societal conscious thing, you know, that people with disabilities are not given the chance that other people are. We need to change our mentality when it comes to disabilities. We need to change our mentality when it comes to marginalised groups that they feel and are treated like second-class citizens, below the, if you're not above the average norm or deemed as normal in society, you're not treated the same. And I have first hand experience of seeing that out in the public, you know. And yet employers are doing their best with people there from Ernest and Young and all these other employers, and they're doing brilliant, they're doing amazing work for these people. But that's not the causation. That's a symptomatic approach. That's the runny nose of a cold. We need to get to the cause of why are people practicing this mentality and not giving people with disabilities a chance. We haven't moved on in 20 years, you know. There's still millions of people unemployed with disabilities, and it's due to the societal mindset, I think, you know. It's that collective consciousness of that these people are below. I might be wrong, but from all the interviews I've done here on the podcast and here, the treatment of people with disabilities and all, I've seen it with my own fucking mince pies. Been out on the mountains with the trainees with brain injury. I've seen the treatment that they've been given. Now that's not treating everybody the same, but I've seen it enough times to know, and I've talked to the likes of Eileen Flynn, I've talked to Sasha Decker, you know, but on the podcast, you know, Sasha with a disability with brain injury, Eileen Flynn from the travelling community, you know, really poorly treated by society, really poorly treated, and it's something we need to talk about. I'm definitely going to have the lady Rosemary from IWA and a couple of the others on and try to get to the belly of the beast of this. I'd really love to tap into and find out why and add some kind of support towards it, you know. I met another couple of amazing ladies called Mary Carroll. She's the Growth Potential, the website sounds fantastic, love to get her on. Yeah, I was really, I was doing a bit of networking, but I was also working for the National Rehabilitation Hospital, I was there, but I'll always have my magic mind's hat on me and see, can we find stories that have the power to inspire. So that's where I'm at. Right, so the interview today, right, is with an old friend of mine, an old school colleague, Pat O'Timmons, right. He's been an advocate of the podcast from the get-go, always really supportive, always giving me positive feedback. He also was the one that told me that I say wow nearly 300 times in each interview, so you probably don't hear me saying wow anymore, and that's thanks to Pato. It was brilliant to hear. I really am blown away when I hear things. I'm like a child. I'm never I'm never surprised. I'm always surprised at things, and I'd be like, "Wow, wow, jeez, I can't get over that." My brain just be on fire. So that's, I really do be feeling when I say "wow, wow, wow." But I'm sure it's probably irritating to people. Like when I say, "What is the crack?" It's just part of my little OCD brain. I just do the same things over and over again. Yeah, so got him on. Oh, sorry, how I got him on was right. Oh, he says, "Thanks for listening to the podcast. If there's anything that you'd love me to cover, let me know." And he says, "You know what? Me and my partner, Rachel, we went through IVF, maybe get a doctor on, maybe, you know, this kind of thing." And I was like, "Wow, yeah, I was always thinking about that. I'd love to know more about it." I said, "Yeah, let me think about that." And I was like, "What the fuck? Get him on. Like, you've gone through it. Let's hear your story. What's the crack with you?" Because I was talking to another friend of mine that him and his missus went through it. And he said he'd come on, but she wouldn't come on. She didn't want their story to come out because of the stigma, because of the shame, because of the feelings that she felt when they were going through it. And yeah, there's still a stigma out there. There's a stigma if you don't do anything that's deemed as normal. People have judgments. People criticize you. People don't accept you for your own choices. Don't think you should do that. That's not right. You know, the baby got out of deals. You know, it's like you didn't do it the normal way or the way it's supposed to be done. You know, all these fucking societal ideations, you know, it's fucking bananas. But yeah, there's a lot of shame and stigma around it. But he was fucking no problem. Yeah, oh, come on, I'll tell my story because it'll be in service of some other couple that are going through it, some other family or potential family that want to do it. And yeah, I really was enamored by his attitude. I remember him in school. He was a good egg and he hasn't changed, which is deadly. We come over the gaff, yeah, probably a little bit nervous, didn't come across like that to me. It was a fantastic interview, talked about the journey, talked about the struggles that they had in it. A bit of a spoiler alert, or what did I say? There's a happy ending. Yeah, that was a spoiler alert. There's a happy ending, no pun intended. Yeah, the Miracle of Rhea, the podcast, the interview was called The Miracle of Rhea. That's the beautiful girl that they had through IVF. And yeah, it's a fantastic interview. Have a listen to it. You know, we cover some great topics. The journey they had, the money they had to spend, the knockbacks, the dark days, the communication. I would have loved to hear her side of the story as well as a woman. There's lots of questions, but he represented to them really well. He was very articulate, really talked genuinely and honestly and from the heart. I was really impressed when he left me and Aaron just looked at himself or each other and went, "That was a fucking belter. That was deadly." So I'm really delighted to present this interview to you, and hopefully there's a bit of learning. And there's all these interviews, you're not into IVF, or there's always something in it that you can take from it. The power of the soul, the power of the person, the determination, the grit, the understand, like there's so much you can take from it. It's not just about the IVF, you know. Like I asked about communication, how did you communicate through me? You know, we didn't, and there's times when I could have, you know, checked in or see how she was, but I didn't want to make things worse. And he was honest as fuck when he says she was already worse, I should have, but we just head down our sub kind of mentality. And he was really honest about that, and I loved it. And hopefully you'll get that from it and enjoy it. He's a good guy. Dublin 8, representing the Liberties up the Livos. So that's this interview. Anything else that I want to check in with you? We're still working on getting the studio, waiting to get the backdrop. The lights are coming. We're going to set up here just to have that consistency, so it's not just me sitting on a chair. Although, this is grand, you know. It's all about the message. It's all about the words that I'm saying. It's all about the people's story, you know. The rest is just bells and whistles, really, isn't it? And I just wanted to kind of make it a bit more uniform. Again, that's probably me and my OCD mind again. But yeah, that's the crack. As always, Noel Roddy from Rooney Graphic, our sponsor. Amazing work, always helping us out. He's doing the backdrop for us. It looks fucking fantastic, by the way. If you need any graphic design, check out Noel Roddy, Rooney Graphics, Rooney Media. He's a fantastic guy, and he's my best mate. He's a legend. Our supports go to Shannon's Hope Line and the Mental Health Warriors, too. Absolutely fantastic services in the Dublin A area. If you're struggling with your mental health, the girls at Shannon's Hope Line, they look after the low-cost counselling, support education for grassroots, for kids, you know, preparing them for teenage years and adults, and you know, they're doing brilliant work in the Dublin area. Oh, everyone's really getting behind them. They're fantastic girls. I love them with all my heart. And then the Mental Health Warriors and the Liberty Soup Facebook page. They do the Liberty Soup for helping the homeless, Fran Dempsey. So check those guys out on Facebook. Yeah, so that's it. So anyway, I'm back in the gaff. I'm not outside doing the intros anymore. It's too cold. I'm like Goldilocks. I don't like it too hot and I don't like it too cold, and I'm just going to stay in the gaff till the summer comes back, and we'll do the intros back outside again. So look, as always, mind your little self. Take care of you in service of the rest of the world. Have a fantastic day, night, whenever time you're listening to this. Mind your little self, and I hope you enjoy the interview. And please, please, please give us reviews, give us likes, get in contact, give us your feedback. I'm loving the feedback I'm getting on Facebook about the meditation group. I'd love to get more about the podcast. I'd love you to get involved. Tell us what interviews you'd like us to do, or people or topics. I'm open-minded. I will do anything once it doesn't cause me or anyone else any harm. I'm game ball for the crack as well. So yeah, check us out on iTunes, check us out on YouTube and all the podcast servers. Share with your family and friends. Come on, be sound. I need your help. Up the Liberties, up the Dubs, up Ireland, up the world, up the humans. Yeah, and mind your little self in service of the rest of the world. Have a fantastic day or night. Bye bye. Enjoy the interview.
Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. On the show today, I have an old pal, old skill mate, Paddo Timmins. Paddo, what's the crack?
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me on.
Everyone always says that. Thanks for having me on.
I'm looking forward to it.
Deadly, deadly. What's that?
Just looking forward to getting the story out there and telling what we've been through over the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Guys, I've asked Paddo to come on the show. As I say, Paddo and his wife, Rachel, decided a couple of years ago.
We're not tired yet.
Well, there you go, Rachel. I'm putting the seed in there. You're going to get married. Right, so him and his partner, Rachel, decided to go down the route of IVF to conceive an L child. And there's a happy ending, no pun intended. Better than that. But yeah, it's even great to have you on the podcast, because you're an absolute champion for the podcast. You've been listening for a long time now, haven't you?
Listen to everything, Matt. Yeah, I don't think I've missed one.
Fair play to you. And you advertise for us, you send it out there, you know, it's really important to have champions. What do you reckon, Aaron? He's doing a good job for us, isn't he?
Yeah, fair to show.
I do try.
You might be taking over Aaron's job on social media. We're doing a transfer. The season hasn't...
The money goes.
The transfer season hasn't finished yet, so we could take you on.
If the money's good, I don't mind, take me on.
Deadly. Right, so come here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and Rachel. Give us a little background on the 2 years.
So we met 23 years ago in Lowell's up on Dolphin's Farm. No, there in the corner, facing the old ocean.
Yeah, chase the ice rink, do you remember that?
But it was actually, they got horned and a few of their friends, they were up in the Rat Mountain, and one of them was caught smoking a joint. And they were fucked out, so they ended up in Lowell's on that night. So yeah. I seen her and I said to him, step cousin. I said, what's the story of her? She says, hold on, I'll ask her. So she went down and asked her to meet me, and we met.
Meet me, I love it.
We went off out of Thurs of Iron Bridge, had a little kiss, left our home. That was the 10th of December, 23 years ago.
Wow.
And we sort of went down from then, and been there ever since, and still going strong.
So I asked you.
And stronger,
yeah. Is that the case? Have you got stronger? Deadly, that's fantastic. Is that because of the stuff you've been through now with the whole baby and the IVF, or?
With everything.
Oh, that's deadly.
Rachel lost her father, I lost my parents. I lost my mother before I met her. My father when I was with her. And then, just as we went down then, just got stronger, and then you're going through the IVF thing, and you know that if you don't get through the end of that, you know, which a lot of people don't.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know, it doesn't happen to everybody, and it sends people, you know, the opposite way.
Yeah, I've heard lots of, you know, tragedy in families, breakups, you know, deaths in families, this kind of stuff. That can tear people apart, because people go insular and they start blaming each other. Oh, it's your fault, it's my fault. It's fantastic to hear that. It's only something I've introduced into the podcast recently. What's your song and why? Do you have a song and why? Or a film?
We talked about that when we start going out with all the dance scenes.
Yeah.
So songs that remind me of horror, like the likes of Rio de Silva, Touch Me, and Pauline Henry, Baby. You know, they were knocking about the dance scene back
did
then.
Did you go to the Olympic back in the day?
Yeah, we went to the Olympic.
That's right.
Well, we weren't going out at that time, but we were going to the Olympic. And
yeah, I remember.
The Harp and the Pink Elephant and Sides and the System.
Memories, huh?
Area Face 24/7, which, you know, back then.
Jesus.
It was the thing, you know, you weren't killing each other.
No, not like nowadays. No,
don't. You can't go into a pub now, you know, you get battered for bleeding staring at somebody.
The only time I heard was probably when I used to go to the Asylum. I think something to do with the Red Wall or something.
Yeah, that was a bit of a...
That's the only kind of time I can look back and say I heard that there was any kind of trouble, but then I was too oblivious, so it was out of my banana. Yeah, it was not to do with me.
That place was just madness. That was mad.
The Asylum? Yeah.
I remember going in there. I was in there once or twice, stepping over bodies lying on the ground. And
yeah.
You couldn't see a thing. You couldn't see in front of you.
Nuts, wasn't it? We used to go to the Olympic, Sides, and then the Asylum on the one night.
Because the Asylum was open all night, wasn't it?
Yeah, till 7 or 9 o'clock the next day. It was absolutely bananas.
Crazy shit. But yeah, they were just songs that were knocking about at the time that reminded me of her. Now, I was into a lot of ballads, so we used to go to rap. And we used to go to the Bag It In for a lot of the Celtic Supporters Club duos and things like that. And it was always ballad sections on in the Bag It In. So they were good nights out, you know. But we never had an actual song that reminded of us each. But it reminds me, songs that remind me of horror are them songs because she always liked them, you know, that way.
Yeah.
But I never really had a song. Yeah, no.
I've
never even had a slow dance.
Did you not?
22 years, never had a slow dance.
You know,
that's the truth.
He's never had a slow dance.
At weddings, and we never had a slow dance. Yeah, Rachel would go up and dance for her uncle. Always got a slow dance, he did. But no, he never had a slow dance.
Rachel, what's the story? He wants a slow dance. Sort this out. Know. Yeah.
So, we'll have one later.
I hope you mean a slow dance.
Slow dance, gone.
At what point then did you decide... Right, let's work. You know, how many years in did you say, we're going to go try have a kid?
We were going out every weekend, you know, not going home lolly or so. It was good. Rachel would have been 30. She's 42 now. So, we got a house, and then we decided, you know, we got the house 12. We're in Ballyfermot for 12 years now. So we
just pull that mic a little bit closer. You could sit there. But yeah, perfect.
We got the house, 12 years ago, so it was just after we got the house, we decided to see what happens to try for it. And we tried and there was nothing happening, and you know, trying to pinpoint dates, taking the ovulation sticks and all, trying to make sure she was ovulating at the time, and you know, I would try them and just didn't happen. So we decided, right, we have to do something about this. So we decided we'd go to Tala Family Planning Centre.
Right.
And we went up there and we had a chat with your woman, and your woman sent Rachel off for blood tests to test our levels, hormones or whatever, to make sure everything was all the whole end, and put me on a waiting list for a semen analysis. And the semen analysis waiting list was about 8 months. So I was like, fucking 8 months.
Why? Why was that?
It would have been free.
Right.
So because it was free, it was a big long waiting list. So we left there. Rachel got a blood test done over at the Tala Hospital. So we said, fuck it. We'll go private.
Right.
So we decided we'd go private. So we went to a crowd called ReproMed and gave them a semen analysis. I gave them a sample. You give them a little tour. After you go to the Jacks, come back with the tour. He contacts you then, so he contacted me that day. I was after going over on my own. He contacted me and he says, your count is this, it should be this, you know. So we say out of a million, I had a couple of hundred.
Okay.
Right, so they were very bad. And I had what was called anti-sperm antibodies. So they protect your immune system as well. Antibodies, that's what they do, they protect you. But what he reckons, what they say could have happened was, I could have got a kick in the balls when I was younger, right, and got an infection down there, and antibodies were produced to protect that area.
Wow.
And this is where my body was producing so much antibodies, that it was actually killing my sperm. And then when it left my body and went to Rachel's body, her antibodies were killing me because I've seen it as a foreign body. So
it's nuts. No pun.
No, like, it's mad. Like, so mine was getting killed left, right and centre.
Okay. Did that make it easier for you as a man to accept, you know, that...
No. I cried.
Okay.
They contacted me and I was with my sisters and I cried with her. I'm never going to have kids.
Okay.
I was in my sister's kitchen and I was up to give me the results and I said, I'm never going to have kids. You know, she goes, I'll be grand. So I wanted to do another one. So I wanted a second one, you know what I mean? Because they say that when you're nervous, things happen, you know what I mean?
The white collar syndrome, yeah.
So
or the white jacket syndrome.
I went back and done another one, and this one was a little bit better. So we had a chat with your man over there in the thing. So that was my second one, like, to do another one. So we had a chat with your man, and he suggested we probably go and do a thing called IUI. Right, because I had so little to work with.
What's IUI stand for?
IUI, I don't know. I really don't know. I just knew all the short versions.
All the abbreviations. Yeah. It doesn't matter. That's just my science brain.
Basically, what IUI is, they go in, right, and they pick two or three good sperm. They power wash them, basically. They power wash all the badness off and the antibodies and all this thing. So they could have two or three decent ones out of a very, very bad dose.
Yeah.
And they basically, they give it a bunt to the egg. So they stick a long catheter, you know, long tube, and they stick that up to the embryo or the uterus, and they give it a little shove through this tube into to fertilize the egg.
So they get the Lewis up.
Yeah.
So they basically travel the thing free, up, put it there,
charge.
Free of charge. Yeah, on the buzz pass.
Yeah. So that's what they do. They basically give it a bump up. So we done two rounds of that. And after the second round, your man decided that he says, I think you should probably check and see if you have any blockages. Rachel had any blockages in her tubes. So they put a dye in to see, and then they do an exam to check whether she had any blockages. And she had a blockage in one of her fallopian tubes. But we were after doing these two things before they check for a blockage.
Okay.
Which we were like,
that's a bit stupid. Yeah. Car before the horse.
He done two rounds of that, took £1,800 off us, two rounds of IUI, and then we went off. We were told then that, like, listen, this is not for you, you're probably going to have to go IVF.
Okay.
So we were told by them that they didn't do IVF, they were only starting off this RepraMed, so... We left there and...
This was 12 years ago, was it?
This was 12 years ago.
12 years ago,
so,
right.
I'm after giving samples left, right and centre, you know what I mean? And I gave another sample. And I remember going, like, I was after giving three samples. This was my third sample. I remember going in and giving another sample because they wanted to check levels again and see what it was. And this is a funny bit, but I remember going in and all the time I went in to give samples in this place, there was always a brown envelope on the table. On a chair. And this one time I said, right, I'm going to fucking see what's in this. Now, after I produced the sample and all, I said, I'll open it. And I opened up the envelope, and inside the envelope was a load of dirty magazines. I've been going in there the last three times, and I'm imagining things. So I could produce a sample, and here's a little envelope. But I was like, fucking hell. I remember telling her, I just said, you know what was in there? I says, I always thought it was my file or something. I always thought it was something belonged to me so that they knew who the sample belonged to.
A couple of skin magazines. You were in there breaking your bollocks.
Yeah, literally. And so we ended up anyway getting away from them because they didn't do IVF.
Right.
We went over, we had to have a hycosy and a laparoscopy. And there to do it, you know, freeing up the tube. And making it workable, basically.
How was your both your minds in this process? Were you still still just focused on the process?
Yeah, well,
You were focused. Was your mind strong at this point?
At the first, like, we thought, like, IUI was going to get us pregnant.
Okay.
this is what we thought. We thought, like, yeah, grants. Not about it. We give them 900 quid. We'll get pregnant.
Sorted.
You know, it didn't happen the first time. I'll give them another 900 quid. It'll happen again.
Right.
Didn't happen. And then we thought to ourselves, right, so we're going to go big here. We knew IVF was expensive.
Right.
Because you hear, like, the first thing Rachel would deal with, I would do, was Google.
Of course.
Google how much does IVF cost?
Yeah. Rachel's and then you just add on Google. A few more.
Rachel's notorious for Googling. I try to avoid it. At all costs, you know, yeah, yeah, trying to avoid it, but she doesn't. But we ended up Googling where we could go. And Rachel was walking in River Island at the time. And there was a girl in there who'd been to the rotunda, the Harry unit, the rotunda. And she told her about who she'd been to in there. And Rachel said, right, we'll write a letter. We'll write a letter to the Harry unit and the rotunda. We'll get an appointment. So we sent that letter off, and it must have been 8 months. We were waiting to get in there.
Can I ask, like, what was the letter? Just,
it was basically to say we'd been to the family planning in Tala. We'd
just to explain the process that you were on.
Rachel had had this. We'd been trying for. We'd been trying for a long time because they didn't. I think it was a certain. You had to be trying for a certain amount of time before you got to see someone.
Okay. Okay.
So we were lying about how long we were trying.
Yeah.
We told them the story that we'd been to Tala and. My sperm had anti-sperm antibodies and went through the whole shit, what you needed to tell them, you know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they basically came back to us and gave us an appointment for 8 months' time, which we were like, fucking hell. So Rachel's thinking of her age then as well, you know, like, she's not getting any younger.
Yeah.
You know, so we ended up getting our appointment anyway over there, and we went in, and, you know, we... You see the prices and everything, you know what I mean? And you went into with three different doctors over there, with three rounds of IVF in the rotunda in the Harry unit. And the fourth round, we talked to a doctor, Dr. Nick, and he had his procedure. Then there was another doctor, a girl, and then there was another doctor, another man. So they all had different procedures, but all the same sort of stuff. With different ways of doing it, you know. So, like, basically, I'm probably jumping ahead here, but Rachel was, you know, put on in. They test her again, and I got another semen analysis, and it was better because I'd started to sort of, you know, help myself, you know, not to, you know, I don't drink really that much anymore, you know what I mean. So I was trying to help me health, because I knew I was going to be doing this again. So they took another sample out of me. It was a lot better than the previous ones.
Okay.
That we'd done back, like, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, yeah. You know that way? So, basically, we went on, and they harvest the eggs then from Rachel. So they put her on an injection, they put her on a steroid tablet, and then they put her on a nasal spray.
Right.
So the injection was every day. She had to inject every day. She had to take tablets two or three times a day. And then she had this nasal spray she had to put up her nose, spray it every, I think it was every 5 hours.
What was the spray for?
So the spray was to, it was basically to make the follicles, the egg follicles, you know, grow and be better. So,
it was like a steroid spray, was it?
No, the tablet was a steroid.
Okay.
The spray was, it helped the embryos, or it helped the follicles, as they were called. They weren't embryos yet, you know.
Right.
They helped the follicles grow, and they helped her get more of them, you know, that way. So, yeah, then you go on, and you do all this for a whole month. So she's injecting herself with hormone stuff and tablets and all this for a whole month. In this whole month, she's just like, it's not good for her head. It's really not. Like, she has to cry herself to sleep at night. You know that way. So
is that due to the whole process or the medication she was on, or a combination?
Everything, the medication and the thoughts of,
yeah, you know, will it work? Will it not work? What's this?
I used to hear her crying and like, yeah, all right, yeah, that was it. You know what I mean? there wasn't much.
It was just head down, let's do this.
So, fuck. Yeah, so three lots of that. So when we went back in after the fourth round, so they went in and they, I think it was they take the eggs or the follicles out. And inside the follicle is the eggs. So they took out, we say, I think it was 10 follicles. And then what they have to do is they have to check the follicles and see if there's any eggs inside these. So like, they could have taken out 10 follicles and there'd be no eggs. So they took out the follicles and there was 8 eggs. Which is, oh Jesus, this is a full shot. Brilliant. This is it. Like, you know what I mean? We're laughing. They then get my sperm. So I give the sample on that day.
Yeah.
And they go in. And what we done was a thing called ICSI. Right? ICSI is like, it's a form of IVF, but they select one sperm and they inject it straight into the egg. Whereas IVF, they put the egg into a bowl and they put the sperm into the bowl and they let them do the thing. There's no help. They just, these go, work together.
Right.
Whereas with ICSI, because my sperm was so bad, they injected the best of a bad bunch, basically, straight into the egg.
So that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. A little bit more expensive than IVF because it's a really tough procedure, you know what I mean, to inject into an egg with one sperm.
Jesus.
So, yeah, they done that. You know, you'd wait then. They bring you in, she'd be put under a general anaesthetic. Well, they actually put her under general anaesthetic when they were taking the eggs retrieved. When they were retrieving the eggs, she used to love that. Under general anaesthetic, she used to wake up like that, spinning. Oh, this is fucking great. She thought she was back in the Olympics. She'd wake up and anyway, and that would be all done. We'd get out then, and they'd call us back 2 days later then, and they put the embryos back in. But they kept the embryos for 5 days,
yeah.
Right? And whatever survived with the 5 days had a chance of growing inside.
Right.
So we had one left, fertilized 5. We'd one left at day 5. So you hadn't even let me back up.
Right.
You know, they say like you can freeze whatever you have left over.
You just had one. And then you know you want sperm.
We'd won.
One good boy.
So it went in and they put the embryo in and you know you have that 2 weeks waiting on a test. So we got to day 9 of that 2 weeks in Nigel Lang. I used to dread seeing my name popping up on the phone. When you knew that you didn't want to see it. I wasn't trying to avoid her, I didn't want to know.
When that, I had that difficult conversation.
I knew, this is bad news. You know, I knew it didn't work when she was ringing me like fucking 3 days before. We wanted to get to 12 days.
And gotcha.
That 12 days, they were the longest 2 weeks, longest fucking ever. You know what I mean? You're like, this is it, this is going to work. And then you get a call at 9 days or 8 days.
I think, fuck. Here we go again.
Yeah, well, it was heartbreaking. It really is, you know what I mean? It's heartbreaking. Before. I can handle a lot of stuff a lot better than she can.
Okay.
You know, that way, I don't know, just being through so much, you know, that way, through life. So I'm a little bit more easier to handle things, whereas she overthinks a lot. I wouldn't overthink a lot of things.
Okay,
fair play.
That's fantastic.
That so that was one failed round, but like, right, we go off now and they...
How long does a round last?
It takes a month.
Right.
It takes a month, so they have to harvest, basically, you harvest your eggs through a whole month.
Oh, okay,
and
gotcha.
And then it comes to the end then, and what they do is, she gives a final injection to herself, and then you're straight over to the clinic the next day.
Okay.
And it's basically to... really. I think it's to release the eggs or make sure that they're ready for collection.
Okay.
And that's the way it works. You know,
but you said only one egg, one sperm.
That was at the end, but on the day when they took all them, like we got 10 and then there was 8 eggs.
Oh, right, gotcha.
They fertilized them and we only got 5 and there was only one of them grew today.
Okay.
Day 6.
Right.
Where we needed it to go.
Yeah, okay.
And We went to the second round then, and we went in and had a chat with them and all.
How far apart are the round? Like, you're doing one round, and then how long do you have to wait to go again?
We went fairly quick that year. Like, so we went early, we say, on that year, and then we went the following year. That year we went towards the end of it, so we went, like we said, fuck it, we get training. Bad enough.
Yeah, why is that?
Just too quick after what we've been through.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Our body was only recovering from taking all the injections and tablets and nasal sprays, and here I was, you know, getting the money together, we go again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
the emotional.
Too quick. You know, it was really. It was just too. We should have waited till the following year, maybe.
Yeah.
You know that way, and.
But then you had that in the back of your mind, your age.
I was thinking, get it done as quick as possible. You know what I mean? Get in, strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah, and we know about this process. We just keep going.
So we went in. We had a chat with another doctor. Went through another procedure that he was going to up doses of the injection, and he was going to put her on other tablets, and he was going to leave the nasal spray because they thought that that had worked better. So off we went, done that. They harvested the eggs, and then they took the eggs and took the follicles. We got 7, 3 fertilized, 1 again. And like, for fuck's sake, you know, here we are with 1 again. Now at this stage, I could imagine what Rachel's thinking, like, 1 again, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is this gonna work now, you know? Mm-hmm. Going off the head now, thinking of whether it's actually gonna happen or not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always going through your mind, you know.
Of course.
When is it gonna happen? Is this it? You know, I always said, you know, this is our year, this is like next year is our year. I eventually got it right, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what I used to say, you know, next year is our year, you know. New Year's Eve, we used to turn around to Rachel and say, next year is our year.
Like, oh, shut the fuck up, you know? I'm picking that up from you a lot, Joe. There seems to be a lot of positivity. You believe that this, you keep saying, this is going to happen, this is going to happen.
Yeah, I thought, like, and, you know, you just don't give up. You know, you keep going. There was many a time, like, you know, you just want to stop and say, not me personally, but Rachel would have said, you know, I'd have to just fucking give it up, you know, and just forget about it.
It's hard.
She wanted this so much as well, you just go at it, you know what I mean? You don't give a shit. So that round failed then as well. Same shit, you know. One embryo gone in. Got a call 7 or 8 days in. I'm like, oh, fuck. She was walking actually down on Cork Street there in a little restaurant there called Honest Tea. You know, they're facing Massey's.
Yeah.
On the bend there. So that's where she was walking at the time. So I got a call. And she said, oh, I think I'm starting to bleed. And I said, do you want me to bring anything in? She said, will you get a pregnancy test in the chemist? So I was, because I'm taxi, it's so handy to just drop everything. So I dropped everything and went, and she done the test, and that was it. Now it was more bad news. More bad news after more bad news. So we left it. We didn't jump straight back in. You know what I mean? We left it for a year, I think it was. We decided. We get a few quid together, you know, because it wasn't easy to get a few quid, because the fourth round, Rachel had been made redundant from River Island, so we used money belonged to her redundancy to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the rest of it then, it was, you know, a bit of grafting to do and getting the money together. So it was the following year then, we said we'll go again. And we went again, we talked to the doctor, he put us on. There was a long protocol and a short protocol, and because of our age, they don't know why we were put on the long protocol. Mm-hmm. So they put us on this short protocol, and it was a lot quicker than the last two times.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, we were done an hour in a month, like, you know, it was a couple of weeks, and then by the end, you had the embryos and all, and fertilized 5, 1 left again. One went in, we're like, yeah, this has to be, you know, this has to be it. Fucking no joy again.
Jesus.
You know, the so longest.
That was 3 rounds.
Yeah, 3 rounds. The longest 2 weeks you have to wait. You know, you're waiting to take a pregnancy test at the end of the 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
just the longest 2 weeks ever.
Was there any, I have a friend that went through the same process and he felt shame and he felt, you know, unmanly. Was that, like, was any of that in that for you guys? Did you feel like,
I would talk to anybody about it. Rachel told her friends, all of my mates knew.
Fantastic.
We go out running, that was my little breakaway from things. I go out running, that was good for my head. Rachel had none of that.
Mm.
She didn't run. She was in work, and when she was made her done, then, and she wasn't walking, there was a couple of times she wasn't walking, so she had a lot of time to think, you know, that way. So her mind, I'd say, was in overdrive.
Mm.
And I was really, she was thinking a lot about it, you know, when that's all you want.
Of course.
That's all you think about.
Yeah, understandable, you know,
But we never felt shame, no. It was, you know, I always thought, like, it's a medical condition.
Yeah.
Infertility.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I thought, like, okay, you know, it doesn't bother me that anybody knows that my little lads are not great swimmers. You know, basically, you know what I mean? Anybody says, oh, what's the problem? I says, my lads are shit swimmers.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say, you know what I mean? Yeah. I wasn't ashamed of it. Fair Rachel wasn't ashamed of it either.
Definitely. I'm really proud of you.
She told her friends, I told my friends, yeah.
Fantastic.
No shame at all. Definitely no shame.
So you've done the tour round. Where did you go?
After the tour round, we decided, this is bad news. We have to get away from here. You know, like, three times. Rachel said, well, will we stay with them? Will we go again with them? Will we leave it for a while? And I said, no, I think we should get away from them. The way it is, you buy a striker and he's not scored, you get rid of him. And that's the way I put it, you know what I mean? I says, we have to get out of here.
Yeah, some man.
So we got out of there and we left it for a while and we decided we'd have a look. And a friend of mine who had been he'd had some form of fertility treatment. I don't know what he got done now, but he was saying to me, I was saying to him, and he was saying, we went to Repromed. We were given a Repromed, Sam, and I said, well, Repromed is the crowd we started off with the IUI when we started off years ago, you know? And he said, well, that's who's out there getting us where we are. So we said, fuck it, we'll send off an email to your man Declan, who runs Repromed, and sent off the email, and he contacted us, and he remembered us from when they first started off, you know? And when we went up, he gave us an appointment. The appointment was a couple of months down the road as well, you know, because, you know, they don't get you in straight away, you know. It's there's so many people in the same boat as you, getting an appointment is tough. So it was another few months, and we got in to have a chat with them. Now, we didn't rush into anything. We didn't rush, you know, and they went through everything, and, you know, you talk to them about it, and they brought us in, and they done a lot of tests on. They done a few tests on Rachel to make sure that there was no problems in her fallopian tubes and everything. Like, they done a load of little tests. I gave a load more samples. I was after giving a sample in my house in a little tub, shot across the M50 to Dundrum. They were in Sandyford at the time, and I left. Giving a sample into a jar. Have her in against my chest because she's supposed to keep it warm. So I'd have her in the top pocket of my short, straight across the M50, hand up the sample.
It's funny to think of, isn't it?
Stop. So I'd be blowing across with a sample of sperm in my top pocket for them to test and see how it was. So I decided, like...
I hope you didn't rob the magazines out of place, did you?
These were great. These had videos.
Did they?
These had a big screen there and a reclining chair and...
Pornhub, what's that one there? Pornhub, is that I don't know, I don't watch that one.
He's had a reclining chair with a roll of like this white paper that you were to put over the seat before you got onto it.
Ah, stop.
Like something you'd find in a doctor's surgery, you know?
Like a Johnny for a seat, is it?
So you go in there, and I was only once I had to go in there anyway, and it was when we were going ahead with this next round, you know that way, so... We went in and had a chat about, you know, the procedure they were going to do. They put us on different drugs. They tried out different drugs because we had our foil. Our foil was like a big, was that tick. Getting the foil, she went through everything, you know. They tested for this, that, and the other. They tested us for the testosterone for, you know, things that might be affecting the egg, like embedding in the uterus and all, you know. So they tested her for everything in the testes. They can't really test me for anything. All they can do is take a sample of them. So there's nothing I could really use. So everything is on her, like, you know. And it makes it, like, for the man, it's just easier. You know what I mean? They just, all they have to do is go into a room and give a sample. And that's basic gear. You know, that way. So, you know, I did feel a lot for her, you know, and I did feel, you know, that she was, you know, she had that all the born.
Yeah, there was a lot more responsibility on her.
Yeah, a lot on her. She's the one that had to give the sample or give, you know, had to produce the eggs then and all.
There was a lot more variables on her side. Yeah, that's really hard. Did the whole process impact your relationship? Was there a...
It made us stronger. Definitely made us stronger because, like, you know, you've been through three failed rounds with, you know, and it just made us stronger, you know, and we often, like, and I often say to myself, geez, we actually, after all that, we're still together, you know, that way. So when we went to them for this would have been our fourth round of IVF, so they put her on different stuff. And they done tests for different things, and they done a little bit more than just, you know, lining her up, giving her drugs, taking her embryos, fertilizing what they could. Whereas in the Hardy unit, it felt like they were just, you know, getting you in, getting your eggs, fertilizing the eggs, getting you. It's like a conveyor belt.
Okay.
That's what it felt like over there. Whereas with Reaper Meds, they sort of give you more care and attention, you know, that way.
Mm.
So they put her on different drugs and they done the same. They collected the embryos and everything, and they collected six, I think it was. And now that's six, then two fertilized and got to the stage where we'd never been to.
Oh, damn.
We've been to the stage six, I think, or stage five was what it was called. Which is where it is before they put the embryo back in.
Right.
Or the egg as it is now.
Yes.
And we got to stage five. So we're like, fucking two.
Here we go.
Shit, we've two. And the two are where they wanted them, you know, that way. So they put one into a freeze. Then we went in and we had the procedure again. They put the embryo in. We waited the 2 weeks. We were supposed to go back over on the Monday for a blood test to see whether we were pregnant or not. But on the Sunday, Rachel, she done the test anyway, and she rang me. She was in work. I was doing the shopping in Tesco's, and she rang me. She says, "I'm pregnant."
What?
And the Tesco's crying.
Deadly.
And the Tesco's crying. And I said, "You shouldn't have rang me in Tesco's and the under fucking shop and I'm crying." But brilliant, couldn't believe, you know what I mean? Never got a pregnancy test before. Yeah. Never got a pregnant, you know, a positive on a test. Thought, oh, this is it, fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So we done the procedure, we went back over to them on the Monday or the Tuesday. They done the test they test your hormone level. Yeah, it was where it should be. It was where they wanted it when you were pregnant. So happy days, couldn't believe it, fucking, this is it, brilliant. Told a couple of people, you know, that were getting the pregnancy test. Didn't tell too many because you're like, you're only 2 or 3 weeks into it now, you know this way. So we thought, fucking, over the moon. Oh, this is brilliant. I couldn't stop talking about it. Just don't start getting too excited. And I can't, I have to. And I'm excited. That's what happens to me, I get so excited. And then, boom. I get cut down, you know that way.
Yeah.
On Mother's Day, we were up having dinner in the halfway house where her family, where Rachel's ma and her sisters and all, and she was getting bad cramps. 6.5 weeks in, she's getting very bad cramps, period pains and all. She didn't say nothing to them. She didn't want to ruin their day.
Yeah.
She didn't want to say nothing to them, so We said nothing. She said nothing. She didn't even say it to me. It was when we got home that night. She says, oh, I'm feeling shake. So into the middle of the night then, she bled for 4 hours. So she lost whatever was there after 6.5 weeks, which was horrifying. Really was. She was really bad. What she could do was fucking go into the toilet. It was, you know, I won't go into the gory details, but you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wow. Basically, she's miscarrying at 6.5 weeks.
Wow.
Which was tough.
Was that one of the lowest points of the whole process for you guys?
Yeah, like the fact that you didn't get, that was the lowest. Was the fact, like, the other time that never worked, you know, you didn't even get a pregnancy test.
Yeah.
This time, you got the test. You got a pregnancy fucking positive sign on the little stick.
Yeah.
Oh, happy days. So that night she bled. We were 4 hours, you know, that way. On that morning she rang up me for now and said, listen, can I come over? So we went over. They done the blood tests, the usual stuff, and they done a scan, but they already told us what we already knew, you know, that way.
Yeah, so it was just,
you know, basically it was all included in the price. So a blood test was included in what you paid them.
Yeah.
You know that way? So you had this test was all included. So they were just carrying out what was left on the list to be done. So yeah, good. Absolutely good. Lowest ever. Just thought to ourselves. Now, our only saving grace was we had another embryo. You know what I mean?
Was that what got you through? Was that gave you hope?
Definitely.
The two?
Definitely. Is that the freeze we had? Because we never had one to freeze before.
Right.
We only ever had the one going in.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, and people are saying, would you not put the two in? But you put the two in and they both fucking die off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So at least we had backup.
Yeah.
You know, and it was backup. And she was backup. You know that way. So we left it. That happened Mother's Day, 2018.
Mother's Day, like of all days. Jesus Christ.
2018. Should never think of that Mother's Day anyway.
No.
But we went on a holiday that year. In the June. So that happened. Mother's Day is in March, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the last weekend, isn't it?
So in June, we said we'd go off on a holiday. So we went off to Lanzarote for a week. Nice break, relaxed, chilled out, came back. Went back over and had a chat with them. And they asked us when we wanted to go ahead.
Mm.
Or whenever we wanted to, you know, we'd go ahead with this, you know. So we said, go back over and see them in August. So in August, we went back over and... So they didn't have to give her all the injections that she had before because we already had the embryo.
Right. So she didn't have to go a couple of steps ahead.
We were a little bit ahead. So what they did have to do, they had to prepare her for the embryo going back in. So we had a chat with the girl over there and she actually just suggested that we do a thing called the intralipids. Now, intralipids are an IV line goes into you. Your body is pumped with parts of the egg yolk. And I have a bit now. I'll tell you what it actually is.
It's the fat of the egg.
Yeah, and it's...
Have a look, if you want to.
I'll tell you exactly what intralipids is.
I know what lipids are. They're fats.
Right, so...
I can't believe you've done so much homework for this. Fair play to you.
Right. They kill intralipids. They also kill natural killer cells that may attack the embryo or the fetus. So they help when it goes in. They fight off. They help it. So you almost suggested like we go and get this done. Now, they didn't do it over there. You had to go private for this.
Yeah.
So we went to Pibinian, I think it was, so one of these grounds. Up in Ballymount, Hibernian Health, and they came out to your house. So what we were to do was have a shot of intralipids a week before the embryo was put in. So we had a shot of intralipids, then the day after the embryo was put in, you had another round of intralipids. And then when you got a positive, you had another round of intralipids. So you're getting three lots of fat space. That's the way I describe it. They're good fats.
Mm.
Because that's what the egg yolk is and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with three rounds of the intralipids and... We did three rounds of the intralipids, and I'll tell you what, I was down in Dingle doing a half marathon in the start of September it was, and the day I was going off, Rachel, she was meant to wait while I came back so we could do the test. So I was due back on the Sunday evening, and she said, we'll do the test when you come back. On the Sunday morning, I was sent a picture of pregnant on the little pissy stick, as we called it. The little stick she used to piss on, you know. Pregnant, I'm like, holy fuck.
When in September was that just put away?
That was the very start of September. It was the first weekend in September it was.
Wow.
And I was down in Dingle, and she sent me a picture of that, and I was like, fucking brilliant.
September's a great month.
Brilliant, hero.
On Tour de September, by the way. Don't forget me, Carter.
That's when the race was on.
Yeah, the Tour de September.
I thought, fucking hell, here we are. Brilliant. Over the moon. This is it. Like, this is
round five, by the way, is it?
This is number five. This is number five, and this is our last shot. I could have got money. I could have got the money.
Were you throwing the towel into the stage?
Rachel, she couldn't take it anymore.
Physically, emotionally, mentally, socially.
Really couldn't do it.
Rock bottom at this stage.
You were putting her through so much with injections and things like that, you know what I mean? So, it was our last shot. It was our last shot. We never talked about what we would do after that.
Mm.
We never talked about if it fails, what we're going to do. Mm. I always stay positive. Rachel's like, I hope this fucking works now. Like, don't be worrying, it will.
Pulling the mic out in front of you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'd be saying, like, don't worry, it's going to happen. So, yeah, she sent me the picture of the pregnancy test, and I couldn't believe it. So, the week into it, she organised another round of that intralipid. So, this was our third round.
Mm.
These were 300-400 quid a pop.
And even though she got a pregnancy test?
Yeah, you had to do it.
Keep going.
You had to do another round of it a week after. So, she got the pregnancy was positive on a Sunday. So that Friday, I think it was, the girl came to the house, the nurse, she hooked her up and put her on the drip of intralipids and done that round. But I tell you something, it was nerve-wracking.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because you're getting to, we got brought back over for a 7-week scan. So they brought us over for a 7-week scan, and they put the scan on the screen, and there you can see the little heartbeat at 7 weeks. You see the little heart. Unbelievable. That's a 7 weeks now.
7 weeks.
You know what I mean? Now it wouldn't be much. It's but a heartbeat. You could see the heartbeat at 7 weeks. And then what she done was she goes, I don't know how we do this was, she put the sound on and we could hear the baby's heartbeat.
What was that like?
Oh, it's just
magical.
Holy shit. I cried. Well, obviously, I'm not going to fucking stand there and not cry.
Dang.
Yeah, we cried. But I couldn't believe it. You're hearing the baby's happy. We got to 7 weeks. This is the furthest we've ever got. You know, after losing, after 6.5 weeks, we're up to 7 weeks. So we were due one more scan off then. And I think it was a 12-week scan we had to deal with then. Or did we go to... No, it wasn't. That was the last scan we'd done with them. So, 12 weeks, we were going over to the kiln. Went over to the kiln, done all the business, got into the kiln, 12 weeks, boom, scan. Everything's looking good. You know what I mean? We're getting to 12 weeks. We can start telling people now.
Fantastic.
So, we start telling people. We didn't tell everybody because, you know, Rachel's like, we don't tell anyone. We tell our close, our family, you know, our friends, you know, a few people who are close to you. You know, we tell them. but we won't tell anybody. We won't go all the way out because it was still in the back of our minds, the worry of what happened before, you know what I mean? So, you know, she was always thinking, you know, just I hope this works out, you know, and everything was in the back of my mind from previous, you know that way. So, got there and she started getting nauseous. You know the way you had
morning sickness.
She had all day sickness. Rachel had, you know, and they said it's a good thing.
Yeah, deadly.
That's what they say in pregnancy, you know, I don't know how true it is.
You didn't care, but, like.
Got a scan at 20 weeks scan. That's when they start checking the liver, everything. They go into detail.
Yeah.
So they check
everything. The organs and the...
Everything was looking good. Everything was perfect. And then it was at... We got another scan, but she hadn't dropped properly. So they wanted us back for another scan. So we'd about been 10 scans. Every time we went up to... We never went to the Cume Hospital for all the midwives. It was up to Luke and we had to go.
Okay, why?
I don't know. They seem to just take everybody up there and they would probably relieve the pressure on them in the Cume Hospital because there's so many people going in, you know. But they ended up giving us a scan every time we went up there. And because it was IVF, or ICSI as we call it IVF, but it was actually ICSI. Because it was IVF, you know, they want to monitor you. They want to keep their eye on you because you had it. We'd had a miscarriage. They watched everything. They watched us like a hawk. So that was leading up to, you know, 24 weeks. So, like, we're getting there now. We're getting excited. Mm. So, you know, after 20 weeks, we start, you know, buying stuff. You know, we start stocking up on nappies and baby wipes and clothes and stuff like that, you know.
So the fun starts.
We stocked up on everything. Yeah, we got stuck in, you know what I mean? We got ahead of ourselves with everything. You know, we had presses full of fucking baby food and stuff. No, we haven't got baby food because we didn't know what we were going to put her onto, you know that way?
Yeah.
So, you know, 40 weeks came along and we were told by the midwife that, no, they're going to take you in. They won't let you go over because it's IVF, you know, it's so valuable. You know what you've been through and
take no chances.
So we went in and the woman tried to do a thing called a sweep. It helps bring on labour. Couldn't do the sweep. She says, come back next week. So this is like a few days in. Come back next week. Went back next week. Couldn't do the sweep. We'll take you in on Saturday. She says, we'll induce you. So on the Saturday morning, we were over in the Cume Hospital at 6:30. Brought her in, tried to give her a thing called Propus. And no pants, not a bleeding dicky board. On the Sunday, they said, right, what we'll do is we'll give you the gel, right? This gel brings on labour quicker again.
Yeah.
I think the most rage you got was a headache. Nothing happened. So we talked to the nurse or the doctor, and she said, we'll check. So she checked on it. She said, no, a section. So a section was the best way forward for her.
Helicopter baby.
Yeah, she wasn't budging. She wasn't moving. The baby was just so comfortable. I remember a few times while we were in the hospital, but they had to keep getting Rachel to drink cold water because the baby was dozing off and going to sleep all the time. And they couldn't get a proper read on the heartbeat. Just a lazy baby.
Were you panicking like fuck?
Rachel as well. You know, but, you know, they see this all the time.
Right.
So she drinking an Exelal bum. You know, and they want you to feel 10 movements or something like that every day like that. You know, if you don't feel 10 movements, let them know.
Yeah.
But so on the Monday morning, she was to go get a section. So they came around, they had a chat. They said, listen, you're on the list. You'll be getting done today, but if emergencies come in, we have to look after them. So twice the nurse came back, listen, sorry, listen. They said, I'm getting done today. And they're like, yeah, you're getting done today. So eventually they came to us at, it was about 5:30 on the Monday evening. And they said, right, listen, you're up next. So off we went down. Now I wasn't allowed to go in. They have to give her an epidural. So I wasn't allowed to go in. So they sent me into a room. to throw on these scrubs and the hat and all, you know. So, you know, I went into this room, I'm on the phone, texting people, telling them what's going on, and the nurse came back for me. She says, right, let's go. So when I went down, Rachel was on the table with a big screen there. Couldn't even see the doctors on the other side of the nurse. And then I said, yeah, all right, yeah, I can't feel nothing. You know, you won't feel anything. So I can't feel anything, excuse me. So, so you won't feel nothing either. So with that, there's a lot of pulling and dragging going on. Pretty rough now. You know, you're looking at them down there, aren't you?
Yeah, Jesus, calm down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could probably feel it quicker than she could.
Yeah.
So, up comes the next of our bump. Up comes the head, the shoulders. I'm like, holy fuck, the size of hole. I'm looking at a baby and I'm saying, how the fuck was that baby inside you?
Yeah.
Because she's like, you're talking to 9 pounds now. So we're looking and I'm saying, holy shit. So they literally bring her off for a second.
Yeah.
Clean her. Make sure her airways are all right. They tagged them up and then they brought her back over and they just lay her there on top of Rachel and just the enjoyment, just mad with the, still can't believe it today.
Must be some adrenaline. Crying, laughing, all the emotions.
Rachel's up there, she's ours. And Rachel's looking at me and we're looking at each other and we're crying and the baby's lying there and she's not opening her mouth. She's just lying there to sleep as usual. That's all she seems to do. Even now, she's probably up there to sleep.
Wow.
But, weird. Like, just, you still look and you're like, she's actually yours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're waiting for somebody to knock and say, listen, we're going to take that baby home now. Thanks for looking after her. You know that way. This is what you're expecting, you know. But we've been through so much and it's been so long in the process.
Yeah.
That, you know, speechless. Absolutely speechless about it. Really, like, just even now, I'm still speechless. Like, here I am. I'm stuck for words here.
Where did the name come from? She's an absolute beautiful name.
The name was weird, right? So Rachel gets the bus for her cousin to work. And she was saying, there's a girl that she knows called a baby Raya, but it was spelt R-A-Y-A-H. And Rachel said, no, it's a lovely name, but that was the only name that she'd heard. And she said, if we call it Raya like that, it's a bit of a tougher way of call. We called her Ray. If they shorten it down, it's going to be Ray. No, we look at other ways of spelling it. So we found a way, and it was spelled R-A-Y-Y-A.
Mm.
So she goes, do you like that? And it's a little bit softer than the other spelling. And I said, yeah, really easy, you know. What else? And she goes, well, what are fucking names? We talked about Tilly. We Tilly mentioned that was it, you know what I mean? So we said, right, that's the way we do it. We Googled it. So Google her. Here we are, Googling again.
Back to the Google
habits. Googled the name Raya, and it comes back to us as Arabic. And it means blessed by God or blessed by the Supreme.
Fuck.
So, like, it's a bit weird, like, you know, where we're after being and where she's come from and what her name means. You know, it's
fantastic, yeah, isn't it?
It's strange. It is strange, you know, like.
Deadly.
We still look at her now and, like, she'd be asleep and she'd open her eyes and I'm saying she thinks, like, these two fucking looking at me again. every time she opened her eyes, the children are looking at her.
Yeah,
just staring at her all the time. Really, fantastic. Just staring at her. Like, there's no other thing you can do to just look at her.
In amazement.
She smiles. She laughs. She wakes up with a smile. You know, we wake up with smiles now. You know, with no worries anymore. You know that way? We've gotten our reward.
Unbelievable. What would you, if you had to do it again or you had to give advice to anyone that's in the same process, what would you do differently or what would you recommend to someone?
I definitely, if I was to do it again on round one and if I knew about intralipids, I'd have done intralipids because it seems to be the only thing that we really, really changed, and it worked. So we had the miscarriage, and then we went in the next round, we done the intralipids, and that was the only thing that we changed. Mm-hmm. Like, there was different drugs, but they all done the same thing, but there were different types of drugs. But the intralipids was the only thing that we actually done different. And if I'd have known about intralipids at the first shot of IVF, I probably would have done them.
Yeah.
You know, it's all money in the end of the day, mate. You know, it all costs.
What did the whole process cost, if that's okay to ask?
Yeah, cost is about 25 grand. About 25 grand, yeah.
That's so
like, from every little thing we've had done from 2000 and, was it 2011, 2012?
Okay.
No, it wasn't. It was Ray, actually 2010.
And Ray was born last year, wasn't she?
She was 2018. Born. No, she was born this year.
19. How old is she now?
She's 12 weeks on. It's actually 11 weeks yesterday, she was.
Jesus. So you're talking to go to 6 or 7 years.
Well, actually, the process of when we started off was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, 10, yeah.
12 years ago.
And that's when you start paying the money, so 35.
Yeah, so like you would have, you know, we got semen analysis costing 100 quid. You know, from stuff like that all the way up, like Rachel had other procedures done, they cost money. The IVF, like 6.5 grand a pop. You know, that was 6.5 grand a pop. When we went private, it went up. Like it was about, I think it was about 7,200. For the last shot then, because we had an embryo then left for the very last shot, which was our final shot, we only had to pay 1,000. Because right. They didn't have to do the whole process.
The whole process again, before, you know?
So it was all done.
Yeah, what's really coming through to me, and where I think you can go, yeah, the IVF was this, it was brilliant, that got you. Your attitude, her attitude, you as a couple, you know, the support she's gave you, the people be blindsided and not think that's important. That shines through to me like fucking, like wildfire, like the fact that you support her, your attitude, your positivity.
I had to
you always thought that there was, we're going to get this, we're going to get this. And I'm sure that fed Rachel.
Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? I was always like...
And you didn't turn in on each other, which is fucking deadly.
But the odd time, like, you'd have a little fucking bit of a go off. I remember getting the Hoover thrown at me, man. She'd kill me for this, but we were in the house one day, and it was before the next round or something like that, I think it was. Before the last round. And so she would have been on injections. Our hormones are all over the place anyway. And she said something to me, and I told her, and I said, "That should be my only fuck." And next of all, the hero got thrown at me.
Oh no. So did you hit you? Did it get you?
It missed me, thank God. But yeah, you need to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Next time I'll be a hero or something.
No, you know, it sort of slips what she's actually going through, you know what I mean? You forget about that, and you say, and then I just turned around and said, "You're my only fuck." And now I'm. What she's been through.
Yeah.
And here's me calling her only fuck.
Of course, but you're through this interview, you are mindful of the responsibility of her. You just said, all right, just to turn up and give sperm. You know, she has so many variables to be mindful of and has to walk around. I'm sure that was hard for her, but you were mindful of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But the general consensus, the general thing was you were good together, you were solid, and you support each other, and that can true. And if anybody can take stuff from that, it'd be... We'd be together through thick and thin, and it's made you stronger.
Definitely made us stronger. Yeah, definitely made us stronger. Like, I don't know whether we'd be able to fight ever again. You know,
he's got the lotto. He's won the lotto now.
Exactly, you know, like it is like winning the lotto. You know, when you've been through so much, you know, 3 failed rounds, a miscarriage, and then boom, you hit the jackpot.
5 rounds of it. Fuck, and you're not meant to do so many.
They talk about like 3 rounds or something like that. That's what I've heard. But, you know, we went over to Reaper Med, like after doing 3 rounds somewhere else, and then over to them for another 2 rounds.
Yeah. But you were shrewd. You were like, "No, I'm not using them. I'm gonna move." You were business like about. You were like, "I'm gonna move on." And you have to be hardcore. It's like we have this.
Team. Remember, your man telling us he'd get a pound. He did say that, which would have fucking hell. He's got a god or something. You know, he did tell us, he says, "I'll get you pregnant."
Did he?
Yeah.
Fuck. Did you believe him?
I believe fucking anything. I'm fucking very gullible,
yeah. Yeah, you're like, this is gonna
I'm as gullible as they come.
Yeah, but no, yeah. I don't know.
Rachel would say that as well, sure.
Yeah. You're like, but yeah. But what we do in Ireland, we believe the man in the white coat, oh, he knows best, but you took your own life into your own hands. And now we're going here, we're moving, we're not going to stay with this, we're going to go to a new one. Now that's not working, we go to a new one. Fuck that. And
that's what we needed to do, you know what I mean? We needed a fresh start, you know, you needed to go somewhere.
Fair play,
Jim. And that's what they don't like. And we went over there, and they were great, like, they were really, you know, you went over and you got to know them all. And we actually sent them an email and copied a load of them in on it, you know, all the nurses that were involved and the doctors that were involved and even the girl in reception who was involved, you know what I mean? And we sent them pictures of Raya and, you know, thanked them for everything they'd done. And they did send us back an email hoping that we could drop into them sometime. But, like, Raya's like, I feel shit dropping into a fertility place with a baby, you know? We were there once or twice and somebody had come in with a baby, you know, and you're fucking sitting there.
But they might give them hope, you know? They're thinking this might work.
But like that was always the tough bit, you know, when you were going through, was seeing people pregnant and, you know, getting invited to christenings and that was fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, they were the heartbreaking, they were the hard times, you know, where it's at the fading for you and here's people going around pregnant and that was, you know, you didn't begrudge them that, but like, you know, what you've been through when you see them pregnant and, you know, it was really, really hard.
Of course, you're going through anything like a death, you see death. When you're going through cancer, everyone has cancer. Yeah. When you're going through pregnancy, you know, people around start having kids, and it's just like you fuckers.
Yeah.
You know.
But we got through it anyway, and you know, we got the prize at the end.
Deadly. What's the one thing you'd like people to take away from this interview after listening to?
Yeah.
Get your homework out there. Get your homework out. Aaron, this is the best. This guy's a champion for the podcast and he's done more homework than anyone. Legends.
Don't feel embarrassed. You know, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. No, like, don't feel shame. Because it's not shameful. You know, that way, and go and talk to somebody. If you feel like there's nothing happening, don't leave it. Get in there as quick as you can, you know, and because you can get an appointment at somewhere, you know what I mean? If it's not happening for you, go and get tested and get checked out. But yeah, definitely don't feel shame and don't feel regret or anything like that, you know, just get out there and do it, you know?
Debbie, what I've was being quite evident and shown through in this interview is your determination, your togetherness, your absolute fucking never give up.
That's it.
Compassion for each other, unity. How was your communication? Did you talk a lot through it, Louise? Was it head down?
No, it was a lot of head down. A lot of head down. You know what I mean?
But that worked for you, though.
Yeah, like, you just didn't want to, like, it was like as if I didn't want to talk about it and upset her. Not at all. So I thought, by not talking about her, I wouldn't upset her, even though she was already upset.
Okay.
You know that way? Like, she used to cry herself to sleep, as I was saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was like, you know, if I don't mention it, I can't upset her.
Right.
This is me to
her. Yeah.
You know, if I don't mention it, she can't get upset.
But
she's already upset.
Yeah.
You know that way. So I probably should have done a lot more talking about it. We've done more talking about it now in the last couple of weeks with the podcast coming up.
Yeah.
Than we did, like, when we were going through it, you know that way.
And the people have talked to me about this when they've done the interview and they've reflected back on it, the process of it. It's been really helpful, you know, to actually sit there and go, fuck, we actually done a lot, didn't we? That was brilliant.
Yeah. I didn't think that I got you all that, right? You're like, you wrote all that down. I said, they're just bullet points. I've been worrying about it.
We talked at the start that, geez, I hope I say this and I hope I say it. Did you hit all the points that you wanted to?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You'll always have something.
Yeah, there'll be probably something now that when it does come up, Rachel would say, you never fucking said that, you never said this. But no, I went through it, like, it was all about how tough it was on her. And that's, it was tough
on her. Fair play to both. It was
tough on me, but not as tough. You know what I mean? I had me running, like, I used to get out and just go running.
And that's another thing, find something that you're passionate about, you know, and stick to that.
I was never any good at any sports in school. You've seen that, I was a fat little bastard.
We both were. At least you were a good looking fat bastard. I was a ginger fat bastard.
I was never any good at sports. I played for Maryland Boys years ago and I was always on the bench.
I used to go chasing again Conkers. The coach who said wanted to get stuck in, he meant get the flags in.
I found something that I was good at, and I started running 4 years ago, so here. A lot of your podcasts are
on the runs.
I got fed up listening to music. What was happening was the music was making me run faster. I didn't want that. I wanted to just relax and enjoy the run. So the podcast took my mind off going faster. Yeah, so I enjoy a podcast.
And I don't say wow as much anymore.
No, you don't. I shouldn't have.
He gave me feedback. He goes, "You say wow a lot."
That was out of your second or third episode.
And I counted. I was doing one of the edits before Kev came along. I counted the edits. And I think in the first few minutes, I think I said about 14 times.
Wow.
I am generally amazed. Like, this story for me is bananas. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad you got me on.
Deadly.
I just won't be able to listen to my own voice now when it does come up.
Look, people get a lot from. I'm absolutely blown away by your strength of character, your Rachel, your vulnerability, your honesty for coming on the podcast. It's not easy. You know, there is a lot of shame. There's still a lot of stigma in Ireland, whether it be mental health, IVF, sexuality, and somebody's going to get some great benefit out of it. I've got an education now, and I thank you. Thanks very much for coming on the show.
No problem, thanks for having me on.
Absolute legend. Right, we do it. An L hug.
Cheers,
brother.
Cheers,
big fucking unit.